This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Iran's foreign minister has dismissed a new U.S. campaign to sow discord among Iran's people, Mohammad Javad Zarif, hitting back at a tweet by President Donald Trump, who said Tehran risked dire consequences if it threatened the U.S. Zarif responded, "Color us unimpressed." At the White House, presidential spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Mr. Trump was responding to a weekend warning by Iran's President Rouhani that Washington's hostile policies could lead to the mother of all wars.
The president's number one goal is to make sure Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. We have similar and shared interests with our European allies. We're continuing to have discussions with them. And when we have specifics on that front, we'll let you know.
Mr. Rouhani held out the hope, however, of peace with the U.S. Sanders was asked if Mr. Trump could reach out to Iran, as he did with North Korea.
Again, our focus is on stopping Iran from having nuclear weapons, regardless of who is there. That's what our priority is. And if we have any further announcements on that front, I'll let you know. But the president and his administration are going to continue pushing and advocating for that.
Indiana University analyst Hussein Banai talked about the war of words.
His point is one that, look, this is a country that sees itself very much backed up into a corner right now, and it will not succumb to any kind of pressure, especially rhetorical pressure from the United States.
The U.S. is preparing to reimpose sanctions on Tehran after leaving the International Nuclear Agreement, with the first set to go into effect next month and more in November. Congolese opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba, freed from war crimes allegations, is expected to return to the Democratic Republic of Congo next week to run for president. He was held in prison for a decade. An appeals court ruled in May he could not be held personally responsible for the crimes alleged against him. This is VOA News. The U.S. NATO commander in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, Monday said the prospect of peace talks with the Taliban underscores success in the U.S. strategy to end the 17-year conflict.
The advancement towards the reconciliation goal of President Trump's strategy has seen progress in the last year that we haven't seen in the previous 17 years, and that is significant. I think that's for the reason that we have now gone to a conditions-based strategy. We're no longer on a timeline for withdrawal.
Joining Nicholson was U.S. Regional Commander General John Vodil, who expressed cautious optimism given the respect given to a recent ceasefire by both sides.
And although the ceasefire was temporary, all parties respected the terms, and there were very, very few reported breaches.
Vodil said it underscored the increased desire for peace. The UN Security Council Monday condemned the use of violence by insurgents aimed at disrupting this year's electoral process in Afghanistan. The UN said the first half of 2018 was the deadliest for civilians. The Washington-based group 38 North said satellite imagery indicates North Korea has begun to dismantle key facilities at a site used to develop engines for ballistic missiles. It's viewed as a sign Pyongyang is fulfilling a pledge made in Singapore during a historic summit with the U.S. Toronto police are trying to determine why 29-year-old Faisal Hussein fatally shot two people and wounded 13 in the Canadian city. Mark Saunders is the police chief.
We do not know why this has happened yet. The investigation itself is very fluid. It is very new. It's going to take some time. And because of that, I'm certainly not going to invite any type of speculation. I'm not in the comfort zone of doing that.
A suspect armed with a handgun opened fire late Sunday on a busy Toronto street. In April, a driver plowed his vehicle into pedestrians during lunch hour in Toronto, killing 10, injuring 15. Embattled Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega says he'll not step down, despite mass protests he do so. Mr. Ortega, speaking through an interpreter, appeared on the Fox News program with Brett Baer.
We were elected by the voters.
Hay periodos electorales.
So there have been electoral periods, there are term limits, and our electoral period ends in with the elections of 2021, when we will have our next election.
Violent protests in Nicaragua have continued since April, leaving hundreds dead. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has vowed to sustain the momentum of his violent war on drugs, saying it will be relentless and chilling. He addressed a joint session of Congress 2 years after taking power. A Liberian woman who contracted the deadly Ebola virus 4 years ago may have infected her husband and two sons more than a year later. The medical journal Lancet said it's the first known case of transmission from a persistently infected Ebola survivor. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 24th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's electoral body promises a secret ballot, but some voters are concerned about manipulation.
I think there might be a certain level of mistrust about the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, but that is a very long-standing issue, especially since the 2000 election.
Sibusiso Nkomo is Afrobarometer's Deputy Operations Manager for Communications. We'll hear the prediction of one analyst about the possible outcome of the July 30th Zimbabwe vote. Today could mark the official end to recent Ebola outbreak in the DRC. And a Nigerian official said the country is safe for today under President Buhari.
When we came in on the 29th of May 2015, 24 local governments was under the effective occupation of Boko Haram. Today, not one single inch of Nigerian territory is under the occupation of Boko Haram.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister and what's killing Africa's iconic baobab trees. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission said Monday that all votes cast during the July 30th general election will be secret. Past elections in Zimbabwe have been marred by accusations of rigging to favor the ruling ZANU-PF party. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The deputy chair of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, Emmanuel Magade, spoke to journalists, diplomats and observers Monday as part of a credibility building exercise.
My assurance to this audience that the primacy of the secrecy.
He says, my assurance to this audience is that the secrets of the vote will not be compromised. My own personal opinion is that the question of secrets of the vote is non-negotiable, he added. That is the assurance that I'm giving to the international community, and that is assurance that I'm giving to the good people of Zimbabwe. The promises came as the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, said it would embark on mass demonstrations Tuesday should the commission fail to meet MDC demands to ensure that every vote counts. The MDC says the Electoral Commission is trying to rig the vote for the ruling ZANU-PF party, just as it allegedly did for the party during the rule of former President Robert Mugabe. MDC and commission officials are expected to meet Tuesday to discuss the presidential ballot, which the opposition says was designed by the electoral panel to give an unfair advantage to President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The MDC is also seeking the nullification of votes by some police officers who were forced to cast ballots in front of their superiors. The opposition has already approached Zimbabwe's electoral court with urgent applications over the same issues and to order the elections body to release the actual voters' roll to be used in the elections. The opposition says it wants to check for voter fraud, which they said occurred under Mugabe's 37-year rule, which lasted last November. Mnangagwa, who succeeded Mugabe, maintained last week that the election would be free, fair, credible and transparent. He challenged the opposition to approach the courts if it doubted the Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission's professionalism. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Prospective Zimbabwean voters have expressed concern that there could be violence during and after the July 30th general election. According to the latest Afro Barometer survey, Zimbabweans also say they remain apprehensive that next Monday's presidential election could be manipulated. The poll also showed that the ongoing presidential campaign has yet to inspire confidence among prospective voters. Still, a majority of voters say they are optimistic the election will be credible. For more about the survey, viewers Peter Clotter reached Sibusiso Nkomo, Afrobarometer's Deputy Operations Manager for Communications in Cape Town, South Africa.
What we're finding is the fear of electoral violence is actually declined slightly, but it does remain high. Zimbabweans who actually fear becoming victims of electoral violence is actually declined by 8 points since May. But, you know, it's still, I think it's too many people who are saying they they're afraid that something might go wrong in terms of their own safety. The other one is actually being apprehensive about electoral manipulation. I would put it this way, significant minorities are saying that they're worried about their ballot secrecy, their counting of votes and announcements of incorrect results, actually. But also some people fear that there might be post-election violence and the military not accepting election results. So it's a mixed bag in a sense, but Zimbabweans generally talk about high levels of fear compared to the rest of the region.
Some people say in Zimbabwe that the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has promised the elections will be peaceful and that security agents would ensure there's no intimidation, among other concerns that they may have. You are saying that those assurances did not affect the way people still see how things might go in these elections?
I think that's a difficult question for us to answer, because obviously what is happening around people affects what they might say. But from our data that we have, I can't tell whether it's that or something else. So what I can tell you is what Zimbabweans told us on the ground when we spoke to them between the 25th of June and the 6th of July. It might have changed by now. And also, you know, the election is in less than 2 weeks. So it's always, I think people need to keep in mind that what we say about from the survey is taken from that point in time, and that's what people thought at that point in time.
Talk to me about concerns they have about the election management, because the senior officials of the Electoral Commission are saying they have implemented measures to ensure the management is free, fair, transparent and credible. But what did you find in the latest poll that you came up with?
Okay, so for instance, when it comes to election information, most Zimbabweans, especially in urban areas, but even in rural areas, a large proportion of people find out about the information from government television and government radio. In terms of knowledge about procedures, it seems over 9 in 10 actually say that they know what the procedure is. So I think from a citizen perspective, they know what they need to do when they get there. I think there might be a certain level of mistrust about the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, but that is a very long-standing issue that has always popped up when elections have taken place, especially since the 2000 election and 2008.
Sibusiso Nkomo is Afrobarometer's Deputy Operations Manager for Communications. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Cape Town, South Africa. A renowned political analyst says it is likely that President Emmerson Mnangagwa will win Zimbabwe's presidential elections, despite a recent poll indicating that the race is too close to call. Professor Shadrack Guto of the University of South Africa says Mnangagwa appears to be having an upper hand over his rivals. But according to Afrobarometer, the presidential election will provide no clear winner, with 40% of voters choosing President Mnangagwa and 37% his opponent Nelson Chamisa. But Professor Guto says Mnangagwa has promised to make Zimbabwe a better country, though many locals are complaining about lack of transparent voters' role and other electoral issues.
He has promised a lot. I think he has opened the space, a democratic space, by first of all dealing with the whole question of land, dealing with the question of race, inviting former white farmers who left their farms or whose farms were taken to go back. And I think he's sending the right messages in those areas. He's also, I think, opening up space for freedom of speech or expression in the country, which I think is very, very important. So there are many areas where I think he's trying to open the doors. The opposition, on the other hand, in Zimbabwe, are also really trying desperately to organize themselves and realign their approach to politics. The MDC coalition is trying to get other smaller parties to join it so that they can have significant power to deal with Emmerson Mnangagwa and ZANU-PF. The situation is fluid. It is very difficult to be able to say whether or not, you know, they will convince the electorate. It's not just political leaders getting together and saying we are going to form a coalition as we move towards elections. It's also, do people really believe it or not?
Shadra Gutto is a political analyst at the University of South Africa. He spoke from Johannesburg with Gabe Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 24th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Nigeria's Minister of Information says the country today is much safer than when the Buhari government inherited it from the then President Goodluck Jonathan in 2015. President Muhammadu Buhari is seeking re-election in the February 2019 elections, but critics led by main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, have accused the government of incompetence in dealing with the insecurity in the country. Opposition has threatened to boycott the election if the violence is not brought under control. But Information Minister Lau Mohammed says the Buhari government has reclaimed all territories once under the control of Boko Haram. He described the opposition as weak and lack of ideas. Mohammed encourages the opposition not to boycott the vote because he said President Buhari's re-election victory will be sweeter if they participate. I caught up with the minister over the weekend in Washington, D.C.
I came here to have a round table with Dr. Peter Pham of the Atlantic Council. Was kind enough to organize a round table for me to exchange views with former ambassadors, serving congressional advisors, members of think tanks, so that I can properly, you know, give the correct narrative about goings on in Nigeria.
Mr. Minister, let's talk Nigerian politics. The elections in Nigeria next year, February. President Muhammadu Buhari has announced he's seeking re-election, but the main opposition, PDP, they have many criticisms of the government, including corruption and the country not being safe. They mentioned basically the killings in Nigeria to the point that they don't think that you can have election in that kind of atmosphere. Your comment?
I think the PDP today as an opposition political party is so terribly weakened and they've lost focus completely. You see, let's talk about security. When we came in on the 29th of May 2015, 24 local governments in the northeastern part of Nigeria was under the effective occupation of Boko Haram. Today, we can say with all emphasis that not one single inch of Nigerian territory is under the occupation of Boko Haram. We've been able to reclaim every inch of land. We're able to recover and resettle hundreds of thousands of Boko Haram captives. Roads in the northeast have been opened, reopened. Banks have reopened. Schools have reopened. And you see, we are fighting an asymmetric war, a war where the other party does not obey any rules of engagement. But we have been able to degrade massively. They are not a show of strength. On the contrary, they are the last gasp of a dying insurgency. Two, PDP is talking about incessant killings, talking about, look, we inherited all this. But the good thing is that we are containing them. And it's very important. Part of the thing I came to do here is to give a context to these herdsmen-farmers clashes. We were dealing with the fallout, largely, of environment and demography.
The criticism is that the president is not doing anything about it,
but
because
that is absolutely not true. And they know it's not true. Specifically, for instance, what has the government done? We've deployed what is called a quick response wing of the Air Force to Taraba and to Binigwari and to Benue State to ensure that these things are nipped in the bud. And that is why the intensity has gone down.
This is why I'm here, to explain that Nigeria is safe. It's much safer than how we inherited it.
We don't know yet who is going to represent the PDP in the coming elections, but it seems that the former Vice President Atiku Abubakar announced over the weekend that he's seeking the nomination of the PDP. In fact, the PDP chairman has accused the ruling party of swimming in the valley of corruption and dragging the nation's economy down.
What economy did they leave when we are coming, when we inherited this economy? I'll tell you. When we came in on the 29th of May 2015, what was the GDP of Nigeria? It crashed from about 6.5 in 2011 to about 2.5 in 2015 when we came in. So recession was obvious. So we entered recession in the second quarter of 2016, which is the difficulty of this government. But within two quarters, we came out of recession. Today, we've been able to double the foreign reserve from $23 billion to over $47 billion, despite the fact that we sold, you know, crude at $28 a barrel at a point in time. For almost, you know, 8 years of PDP, we were selling crude for over $100 a barrel. So with much less, we were able to achieve much more. In the area of, you know, agriculture, for instance, is on record that while they were there, importation of rice, we were paying $5 million every day for rice importation. Today, we are proud to say that from over almost 480,000 metric tons of rice that was being, you know, imported from Thailand, it has gone down to less than 24,000 metric tons. Today, we have been able, in less than, you know, 3 years, be able to build 750 kilometers of new road and revamp 650 kilometers of new road. We've raised power generation from 2,690 megawatts to over 7,000, you know, megawatts. We know our strength, and we know that we have invested in the people. So we know that those that we have worked for are solidly behind us. If these criticisms are really, really damaging, or if they are really true, we'll be worried. But we are not. And I can tell you that I speak for millions of Nigerians who've appreciated what we've done. I'm speaking for millions of Nigerians in the Northeast who for 6 years were unable to even go home because of Boko Haram. I'm talking about, you know, hordes of Nigerians whose children couldn't go to school for 6 years in the Northeast. I'm talking about Nigerians all over across Nigeria whose children with 8.2 million pupils, with parents and relations whom we feed every day in Nigeria. I'm speaking about, you know, farmers who have made so much under this administration.
So what would you say to those who say they might boycott the election if the security problem is not solved? What do you say?
Frankly speaking, I would rather encourage them to work hard on their campaigns rather than boycott them, because our future will be sweeter if they participate in the election.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo are expected to announce this week an end to the recent Ebola outbreak in the country. It's been more than 5 weeks since a new case of the viral disease was identified. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
If no more cases are found, the Congolese Health Ministry will declare the country Ebola-free this Wednesday. The recent outbreak in the northwestern DRC killed 32 people. Another 21 people were infected but survived. Those numbers are small compared to the 2014 Ebola outbreak in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. That outbreak of the virus affected more than 28,000 people and killed 11,000. Florent Del Pinto is the head of Congo's Ebola response team. He said health workers used the lessons from the 2014 outbreak to contain this one.
In West Africa, around 20% of new contamination were due to unsafe burials. So we have been very active in ensuring that all suspected cases were benefited from safe and dignified burials to limit the risk of contamination. Community engagement is also something that is very important to be able to sensitize the people on what is Ebola, how to prevent from getting Ebola, and what should be done when some signs or symptoms are detected.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has given an experimental vaccine to people who came in contact with those who came down with the virus. The UN agency has so far treated more than 600 people. Del Pinto warns the deadly virus could still re-emerge.
The challenges are important here because, first of all, it's endemic, meaning that Ebola will reappear in the future here in the RC. So one of the current challenges is to get ready for the next one and to try to increase our capacities, increase our readiness to be able to be ready when it comes.
The DRC has seen a total of 9 Ebola outbreaks since the viral disease was first detected in Congo in 1976. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
The ancient and iconic baobab tree, with its distinctive swollen trunk, grows in many parts of Africa. But the trees rising out of the savanna in southern Africa today are dying at an alarming rate. Scientists are not sure why, but many suspect climate change is to blame. According to a study published in the scientific journal Nature Plants, 9 of the 13 baobab trees between 1,000 and 2,500 years old have died over the past dozen years. Viewers Deborah Block takes us to Limpopo province in southern Africa, known as the land of the baobabs.
A villager in South Africa's Limpopo province ponders over a dead, collapsed baobab tree. The trees are a lifeline for many who live here.
I'm very confused when those trees died because we get help from this tree, healing, and then food we get from these baobab trees. Shelter we get from baobab trees.
This tree is estimated to be 1,200 years old. It is among the scores of baobabs that are dying at an alarming rate in South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Scientists say rising temperatures and drought caused by climate change may be the reason.
In southern areas of the baobab distribution, we see very few juvenile trees, but at the same time we're losing the mature trees. So what we're probably looking at here is a shift in their distribution in response to climate forcing.
Baobabs are the largest flowering tree in the world and can grow more than 20 meters high. Their trunks and branches store large amounts of water sucked up during the rainy seasons. People use the tart fruit to make nutritious drinks and a yogurt-like food.
It's like a type of medicine. We get energy from that thing.
Baobabs are part of a larger ecosystem that supports countless animals, large and small.
It's so important to the life of the people and the ecosystem. Perhaps it's time we start to, you know, put those species on the list of restoration priorities. Because we can plant species like, it's very easy to grow the seed of, to grow a plant from the seed of baobab for those who know to do it.
Efforts to restore the ancient baobabs are growing more urgent as the magnificent trees that have stood here for millennia slowly disappear. Deborah Block, VOA News.
And that's it for this Tuesday, July 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever. for your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.